You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
This is a bit of a change of gear, but it's a really good question. The question is, the morality of Christianity seems impossible or undoable in today's world. What do you think? So saying that the moral system of Christianity is so high that it's actually an impossibility. And almost, why would you go there?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. You know, when I become a believer, when I say yes to Jesus, when I become Christians, the reason why I become Christians is because I want to fill this emptiness. I didn't realize there's so many bonuses that comes the way when I say yes to Jesus. I didn't realize the change in me, but people see the change in me. But the moment I realize the change in me, when I start to like what the Bible likes and start to dislike what the Bible says no to, I see it for the first time, not as a bondage, but as a boundaries to protect me. And I see it as like, it's like a loving God, loving Father, protecting a child and say, don't do that. It will hurt you. It will destroy the precious things about you. It will ruin. It broke your heart. Don't do this. It's not limitations, but it's loving protections. And slowly, though, but it doesn't come right away. Slowly.
So slowly, like the story, a year or 2 years?
It's months and years and years, years. But there's something changed in how I, you know, when I realize that there's something changed that without me realize the change is there, my part is just I'm excited about the Bible for the first time. I'm excited about going to church. I'm excited going to Bible study. I'm excited learning. I don't want to change. I just want to learn. But the change happens as you listen and the word become alive in you and the word become a lifestyle. I remember, I think the most significant change I realized happens is that when I went to nightclubs after I became Christians. I mean, like, I still go to nightclubs, you know, even 2 years after I became Christians. But even before I became Christian, when I go to nightclubs, I don't get drunk. I drink, and I know I have a technique of drinking that I don't get drunk. And one thing that I did before I became Christian is that I love going to a club, making fun of people who's drunk in the club. Sometimes I try to find my friend who's sober as well. I was like, hey, okay, sit here. Okay, look at that girl. Oh, she's so stupid. Look at her. Oh, she trips. You know, oh my gosh, look at that guy. He get rejected. Oh my gosh, we become a commentators over people in the club for hours. And so much fun. That was like the very things I love to do. After I became Christians, I think months later, I went to a club looking forward to make fun of people. Sitting there, and I start to cry. There's something changed in my heart. I start to look at the girl who wears such a mini skirt and get drunk and flirting to all people around her. And I was like, oh my goodness, if only you know that your body is a temple of the living God where you're supposed to worship God, not supposed to live that kind of lifestyle. And then when I see a guy who's just like, you know, tempted people, it's like, if only you know how precious that person that you talk to. You know, she is not an object. He is not just an object. They're made in God's image. They're created. They're broken, but they're created by God. And all of a sudden, I start to see people.
That very differently.
Very differently. I just start to see them in different light that I have compassion. I cried in nightclub. And I start to end up praying for them. Like, Lord, please reveal yourself to that lady because you have done in me. I want them to know you too. And please, God, help that guy. Maybe he feels lonely. That's why he keeps drinking. And I start to say prayer over these people. And I'm just like, get tired of this place because I have to pray for so many people. Maybe one of the reasons I don't
so
go
you were
clubbing
less
anymore.
Fun at nightclubs after that.
I think fun. Nightclub is no longer fun. It was loud music and that became a mission place because I keep praying for them. I cannot talk to them because it's so loud, but I just keep praying for them. And see, morality or God, you know, or boundaries is when you think deeply, when your heart has been changed, it is for your own good. It's loving Father protecting you, protecting you.
But it's interesting. If someone had told you that before you had met Jesus, would have been part of your no, wouldn't it? Like no on the left cheek and no on the right, because it seems like a restriction.
Yeah.
But then until your heart, something touches your heart, then it actually becomes a good thing.
Yeah, I think, God surely changed the heart that you'll start to appreciate of his loving message in the Bible for you,
The question here has come up a couple of times. I think you've kind of answered it. It's come up again. Do you really miss being a model? Like, you know.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope so.
Yes. I'm always being honest, but this is like honest to the deeper layer. You know, modeling, it's such a unique world. You will see beautiful outfit, beautiful makeup, and people are just so creative. And you see every single day is always new thing, never the same. And there, supposedly, there's no dull moment. It's so funny, even though there's so much fun, but there's so much, like, lostness in that middle, you know. And it seems people try to pursue lots of things in order to feel something that's missing in their hearts. But the beautiful is there, but it's feeling is tainted with something that's missing in their hearts. But when I see modeling world, it used to be something that, you know, to earn money and to, you know, to be famous. But now, it seems to be like a mission field that I want them to know the one who changed me. And I would love to go back, not as a model, but as someone who's like, hey, I've been where you're at. I would love to help you. You know, I would love to help you to teach you how to do this, how to be professional, how to do that. And then, and hopefully you also will know the one who changed me, the reason I'd be able to do this, because somebody changed me, and that somebody loves you as well. But one thing is that if I can go back to the old me, to little Tracy again, to, you know, to teenage Tracy, the two things I would love the most is, like, I would love to change the most is, first, that I will use my wealth, I will save money, and I would love to use it for greater good. It's okay to be famous. It's okay to be rich when you use it for God's glory, when you use it rightly, when you have money and you use it to help others, to make people's life a better world for them to live in, to help people build life, educate them, you know, change their life, giving them opportunity and getting to, for them to know there is hope. And also fame. I would love to use fame to be a platform for influence people who probably at first admire the work, but I want to use that platform to introduce them to the good news. Because you cannot find happiness in anything else but in God. I've asked many people, hundreds of people, and they're finally happy when they know the true God. And that changed everything.
Just touching on that, and I think it was really interesting, your story, how exasperated your friend was, who said, if you don't like living, you must have been really quite annoying. I like, for someone who has said something that strong, it's quite amazing. But touching on that, are you still in contact with many people from the modeling world, modeling friends? Does it feel like there's a connection there, or is it, you've gone off to live in Oxford and you've studied philosophy and theology. Is it too far away now? Yeah.
I stay in touch with lots of childhood friends through Facebook, but models' friends, some of them, but many of them, you know, maybe change the last name is really hard to find. But my colleague told me that, Trace, find him on Facebook. Just keep searching until you find the right photo, and, you know, if you can remember them, and stay in touch and find out. Especially the girls that I bring to church, I wonder how has their life been, you know, ever since they encountered Jesus. So I would love to actually be able to stay in touch with models or people in the past. But you know, one thing that really changed, I used to hate farewell. I used to hate saying goodbye. I used to really tired of making friends because models travel a lot. You met a model in the photo shoot or in the backstage, but you won't see her until 6 months later or a year later. So it's tiring of building a friendship again and again and again and again, and constantly hurt your feeling because you're not going to see them anymore, or maybe you're going to see them sometimes later. But one thing's different is that with Christians, is that this is my line whenever I see Christians. It's like, if I don't see you on earth, I'll see you in heaven. And it's a beautiful farewell, knowing that even on earth, if we're going to be separated by distance, by time, we're not going to see each other anymore, there's one place that we're going to get together. You know, embark into the destination that as a believer, as a Christian, God promised that place to those who believe in Him.
Yeah.
And that for me, that's a beautiful ending.
It's a very different picture, though. I think the picture you must have in your mind is very different from what many people must have, which is, oh, there used to be an ad for Philadelphia cream cheese, and the angels are wearing white, and the most exciting thing that happens in heaven is Philadelphia cream cheese. And like, really boring. But your picture, which I, is that it's of relationships and friendship and beauty and maybe a bit of glamour in the presence of God. Yeah, which is quite a different picture.
Okay, I honestly, thank you so much for saying that, because when I read the Bible, when I read Revelation, I realize that, you know, it's a new earth. It's a perfect place when there is always day, there is a brightness because God shines. And we can meet God in person, you know, like seeing Him, worshiping Him, adoration, and just, you know, honoring Him. And then meet up with everyone that believe in Him and that you met on earth, and even those people that you write in the Bible. And it will be amazing time, because my hair will be so much thicker. and every imperfection that we have on earth is just going to vanish. And we're not going to have any human feeling of jealousy, of anger, and this. And it's just going to be like so much love and so much kindness. And then the rest of our lives, we're just going to durations and telling story. But and I would love to meet lots of famous people there. Now, you know, just asking them like, Paul, what happened when you walk in Damascus? What's the life looks like? You know, I want to ask all these amazing people in the Bible, you know, in the past life that has gone to be with the Lord. And then it's just the descriptions in the book of Revelations and many other places in the Bible. It's totally different. And how people portray that heaven is just cloud, boring, you know, music, sleepiness. No, it's going to be full of the most amazing thing that you never can dare to imagine. It will be there. Perfect, glorious, shine. No fear. It's just going to be amazing place. And you know, when I did my comparative study, no one described afterlife that beautiful except in Christian faith. Hmm. And for me, you know, the imagination of humankind, you know, when we feel like there's not all the beauty that we've seen in the world, it never really fulfilled the heart, because we are made for another place. Mm-hmm. I think what we like, what we appreciate about the beauty that we see is because it's a glimpse of what we're going to see one day when we in eternity forever with God. One of the most exciting things for me is meeting up with Jesus. Hmm. I just want to thank Him so much for changing my life.
Yeah. So that comes to an earlier question that was just touching on that. So when you were first, I guess, I love that you, this reality, and I think you were so honest. You said, I didn't want to know Him, talking about Jesus, even though I had never met Him. and I think that's really interesting. I think that touches on what probably, I think, you know, a number of people are like, have a kind of a false view. And I didn't want to know Him because my friends didn't want to know Him. When you talked a bit about His kindness and His compassion. When you were kind of meeting Jesus, reading about His life and discovering Him, what were some other things that drew you in? And were there any things that you found really difficult? So there's two questions. Were there things that kind of drew you in further, but were there any things that you kind of thought, oh my goodness, hang on. Yeah,
so two things. First, the one who, the one drew me in later, but let me just say what is really, really become resistant things, like I just don't get it, is that when people say like, when you know, the cross of Christ, the cross when He died, is the one who paid your, you know, like when He died, He paid for all the wrongdoings that you've done in order for you to be righteous, that you become a believer and you'll be with Him. You're part of God's family. For me, it's like, wait a minute. That thing's happened 2,000 years ago. It's not significant for me now, because that's a long time ago. And someone told me this, Trace, Jesus' blood is sufficient to cleanse the whole sin of the world. It'll be effective when you say yes to Jesus. So His precious blood will never go in vain. And for me, it was like, so He wants to cleanse your sin. Effective when you say yes to Jesus. And I was like, really? So it doesn't have to, I don't have to be in that time? No. It's at any, you know, for the rest of the world, you know, like anywhere you at, whoever you are, anytime, that when you say yes to Jesus, He will transform your life.
I guess the thing is, though, I guess if you're
understanding... It's so hard to believe, but it makes so much sense, you know, because for me, the reason why I want to believe the cross of Christ is because I want him to feel this emptiness. And second, the idea, when I read about the promise that Jesus made, he is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through him. For me, there was like four things happening. He is the way. No one, the way means not one of the way. It's not one of the way. He said, I'm the only way. And then the truth. And when I read the Bible, when I read about him, everything that he says, it sounds, it's true, but too good to be true, but it's true. I don't see any false. I don't see any lie, because this is eyewitnesses from many people. And then, and his life. So people say, like, when you're not a believer, when you don't believe in Jesus yet, you might be alive, but you actually dead in the inside, you know. You're like a dead man walking. Like, you're dead spiritually. So if he's the one who brings life to my heart, then there will be change. But other hope is also like the destiny that he promised. And for me, that was like, wow, the security on earth and the security and the destiny. And for me, at the end, I was like, you know, I want to believe because it makes so much sense. And it really started to touch my heart.
Okay, can I challenge you a little bit? Because the question that's coming here, it's a good question. But isn't it arrogant to be sure about going to heaven? Like, how can you be so sure that you are going to heaven? I guess that's the sense of the quiz.
I used to think that Christians are arrogant. I used to think, like, because they keep saying, like, yeah, because we're Christian, we go to heaven. I'm like, oh my gosh. Seriously, how do you know? Have you been to heaven? Who told you that? Where is the boarding pass? You know, where is your passport? You know, like, where you know, what kind of vehicle, you know, like,
how vehicle.
You go, vehicle yeah. to go to heaven? Like, just, you know, it just, the idea of heaven is amazing. But even, you know, but then it hit me when I see people who died. Because I wonder, like, oh my gosh, seriously, because I won't see them. Their body is there. Their soul is not there. They're not moving anymore. They're cold. They must have gone somewhere. Where do we go? Where do they go? You know, like, I wonder. I think that moment when I realized, like, when I see people died, and I realized, like, okay, the question about heaven is actually quite significant, because I want to know, where do I go when I die? But then, you know what's actually very unique is that when, you know, like, it is not, okay, I have this illustration. Okay, I have a crush on Prince William when I was younger. I don't know, many of you probably have, you know, people around my age.
Not so much.
Maybe on.
Keep going. Sorry, I'll just
maybe,
be quiet.
Maybe
I'll be
when
quiet.
You're young,
you keep going.
You're the
sorry.
Prince Diana era, right?
Anyway, let's keep going. Oh, sorry, I interrupted.
Okay, so basically, I was thinking, like, you know, I think someone challenged me with this, like, Chase, if Prince William inviting you to go to Buckingham Palace in London, he invited you. He said, "Trust me, you know, come. Trust me," and the invitation is there. When you arrive in that palace, because you say, "Hey, I'm Tracy. I'm come here because of the invitation of Prince William," the door will be opened for you, and you'll enter the kingdom. And he was like, "Hey, Tracy, nice meeting you. You're from Bali, right?" He probably knows everything about me. But if I want to come to Buckingham Palace and just say to the guard, "Excuse me, sir, I know you don't talk, but can you please call Prince William? I want to see him."
You mean the soldier in the funny hat?
Yes.
Yeah.
And as much as if I cry, if I do everything, they wouldn't stop. They would ignore me because I'm not invited. And, you know, and when Jesus say he invite us by believing in him, I don't think it's arrogant. Because I don't say, like, I'm good enough to go to heaven. I'm perfect. My life is amazing. I say, like, no. He, the owner of heaven, inviting me to go, not because of my good deeds, not because I'm amazing, because of his compassion.
Because of his invitation.
Because of invitations.
Yeah.
And you it's don't, arrogant you, for me to say no.
Yeah.
Because who am I? I mean, like, where do I go if I don't go to heaven? I will go to somewhere else called hell. You know, if I refuse him, there's no other place, but the option is just two. Away from him means hell. Close to him means heaven. As simple as math as that. So I say yes to his invitation because I cannot help myself. There's nothing I do can bring me to heaven.
So the opposite of arrogance, it's because I've got nothing. I've got nothing to offer. I can't work my way there. I can't get there. But it's because I'm confident of who he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you for completing my words.
That's good. One last question, and then what we might do is just let people have a chance to meet you, take a photo with you.
We'd love to say hi to all of you.
Yeah, so we'll
do that.
Be
3 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah. So I reckon this is my last question. What was it like going from modeling the glam of New York to studying at Oxford? Did I say that well?
Yes. Wow. I didn't realize that, you know, when you say yes to Jesus, I'm just overwhelmed by the miracle that he's done. That's why I'm keep sharing this. You know, when you say yes to Jesus, your life will be changed in the way that he will direct you into places that you never thought you would be. When you keep trusting him, he'll bring you to the next level of life. I didn't realize this because I was just a joyful person who has been changed by God. I didn't even realize that. One day I was at this seminar, and the professor, the main speaker, is a professor from Oxford University, and then he gave me a scholarship to study at Oxford. I sat there crying. I cried because I didn't finish. I didn't go to university. My school was terrible. I'm traumatized by school. And I always think I'm so stupid. There is no way I can go to uni. I sat there and thinking, like, this is a mistake, God. The person doesn't know that I'm stupid and I don't speak English. And my grandma looked at me. My grandma, my devoted grandma, my Christian grandma, just said to me, like, what's happening? And I said to my grandma, Grandma, it's a mistake. They give me a scholarship. They, you know, like, it's to study theology. And my grandma says this, when God called you, he will equip you. When he called you, you cannot say no. Go. Trust him. And that, she borrowed me faith. She lent me her faith. I came to the professor. I said to him, like, I don't speak fluent English. I don't know much of theology. I love Jesus, but I don't understand theology. And he said, I pray, and it seems like God wants me to bless you with the scholarship. I arrived in Oxford. Probably I'm the most stupid Oxford student ever in the history. I was sitting there not knowing anything. I'm just like, in fact, one of the things that, you know, when one of the professors explaining about the structure of Anglican Church in UK, and then they said, oh, then parish. I'm like, I used to live in parish. And my friend and my friend said, Tracy, it's parish with H at the back, not the city. And all of a sudden, my vocabulary from Jean-Paul Gaultier, Yves Saint Laurent, Valentino, Carla Jiffel, I have to change to Saint Augustine. You know, I have to change to lots of saints from the Bible, from the church fathers. And I was sitting there thinking, like, God, if you want me to be here, like my grandma said, you will equip me. You will add it what I needed. And I spent so many hours at night studying at the library, just recapturing what I've learned during the day and catching up all those missing things, the word I don't understand, the theological explanations. And I say, God, you want me to be here, even, and you believe in me. And may this be the time for me to learn more about you. And may you use that moment, this study, one day, for me to be able to explain to those people who want to know you. 3 years. For me, there was a sanctification time. There was a time when God just renewed my heart, renewed my mind, and also just, I call it heart surgery. I was already Christian for some times, but slowly God just opened my heart again. There's things I hide in the deepest part of my heart. Anger for a few people. But I thought, like, as long as I don't see them, I'm fine. But God said, no. Even when you don't see them, you have to forgive them, for I have forgiven you. And that was a challenge, the heart surgery. And that's a journey that, you know, God will keep doing until our heart is right before him. And it will constantly work for the lifetime, I think, until we become perfect in heaven. But Oxford, for me, is God's visible miracle of restorations, of equipping, of sending. Because I come back to Indonesia with assurance that God wants me to be full-time in ministry. Hmm. And brought me to work as a pastor for 4 years and to be an itinerant speaker, traveling speakers for now 3 years. And that giving me a platform of knowing him now from theological perspective even deeper. And praise be to him who restored. He gave back what the locust has eaten, the Bible says. Like, he gave back what has been taken from you. So he is God of restorations. We are living in a broken world. We have brokenness in us. Come to God and he will fix you. He's the only one who can fix the brokenness in us, in our relationship, in our career, in the way we see beauty, in everything else. We are broken. Only him can fix the brokenness and bring the true happiness.
I think it's a great note to end on. Tracy, thank you for sharing your story, and thank you
for letting us interview you. Thank you.